You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Morning, Brian!
Hi, Kate Monster.
How's life?
Disappointing.
What's the matter?
You're listening to Tony Telecast from The Ensemblist, the only podcast that shows you Broadway from the inside out. I'm Mo Brady.
And I'm Aaron Albano.
What?
No, it sounds stupid.
Aw, come on.
When I was little, I thought I would be...
What?
A big comedian on late night TV.
Welcome, listeners, to our miniseries about the Tonys, bringing you all the drama behind the drama of a theater season in Broadway history.
In each podcast episode, we watch a telecast of a previous Tony Awards, not only the performances, but the opening and the speeches to see how it reflects the season as a whole. So let's start our second half of the conversation about the 2004 Tony Awards.
Woohoo!
I'm pretty damn smart.
You are!
Thanks! I like romantic things like music and art. And as you know, I have a gigantic heart. So why don't I have a boyfriend? Fuck, it sucks to be me.
Me too.
All right, our first nominated performance, Fiddler on the Roof, with a mashup of tradition and bottle dance.
Well, first we have Tevye walking through the aisles like he's Santa Claus. And then we have tradition and the bottle dance.
That is such a Radio City Music Hall reference.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of this performance?
I loved it. But I also love Fiddler on the Roof. Fiddler on the Roof is arguably one of my favorite, if not my favorite show, one of my favorite shows in the musical theater catalog.
Oh, it is a incredibly well-loved show. This is the fourth of five Broadway revivals so far.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, not even including the all Yiddish version that we just had off Broadway.
Right. It had been on Broadway in 1976, 1981, 1990, and 2004. This is the longest time we'd gone without a Broadway revival of Fiddler.
Oh, interesting. Wow. And then the fifth one was 2015, correct?
Yeah. And we saw the original Jerome Robbins choreography for the opening and for the bottle dance.
Mm-hmm.
Is this where I say I don't love Fiddler on the Roof?
You can say it whenever you want to.
I think it's long and kind of boring.
How dare you?
I mean, I care. I just don't.
That's okay. A lot of people, this is not their favorite. And they're monsters.
I could just use the like 2020 like snipped version where we like took out a half hour of it.
What would you cut though?
Oh my gosh, all of the pauses. Ugh, there's just so many pauses.
There aren't that many pauses. In a good production, there are not that many pauses.
Okay, well, then I haven't seen a good production. This is, though, the highlights in my mind. Tradition and bottle dance. These are the two numbers I can stay awake for in a production of Fiddler on the Roof. Like, they've done a very...
I mean, those are definitely, like, the high-energy pieces of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, tradition is, like, arguably, as an opening number... It's arguably on par with like a ragtime opening in terms of like establishing the world that we're living in.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. These are good numbers. And seeing the original Jerome Robbins choreography, everyone loves a bottle dance. I mean,
the bottle dance is wonderful.
Bottle dance is like special skills before special skills.
The bottle, accurate.
Before they were like, hey, do you have any acro you can show us? They were like, hey,
can you dance with a Manischewitz bottle on your head? Like... And not drop it, like live.
What I do think is funny is that it's like the two joyous moments of the show, right? Uh-huh. It's like, hey, everybody, let's forget this is about the persecution of Jews, okay? We're just going to sure. Do happy.
But yeah, but my favorite character, especially in this dance, is Nahum the Beggar. Because after the bottle dance, he's the one that kicks off the around the world clap, clap, around the world clap, clap. And he is living his goddamn life. Like, it is, like, the way he arches his back on his around the world. Like, everyone else is, like, a sensible, straight back, like, up, but, like, living. He is, like, you'd think he was in Footloose. He is going for it.
This is a gentleman who is like, I'm on the Tony Awards and I am dancing at you. He did extra stretching that day, I bet. I bet mm-hmm. He may have even gone to yoga.
Because he was
ready. Let's give a little shout out. We have to give a little shout out. This is Thomas Titone, T-I-T-O-N-E.
Work. He better live in those rags that he wears in that number.
Thomas. Oh my gosh, look at all these credits. He was original production, original cast of The Most Happy Fella, My Favorite Year, a swing on the 1994 revival of Carousel, was swing and dance captain on Once Upon a Mattress in 1996, and here he is.
Killing it on the 2004 Tonys. Selling tickets with that back.
Second performance of
the Carolina Change.
Lots White.
Carolina Change, Lots okay. White.
So this is the pinnacle of performances, in my mind, of not showing off a nominee well.
Okay.
Because of the vocal health of Tanya Pinkins at the time.
Okay.
I have not seen Carolina Change. Come at me, internet. I do not know what the show is about. So I don't know if this is a good representation of the show. But during this performance, a very talented actor and singer is obviously vocally tired and cracks multiple times. It is disappointing, I think, for everyone.
See, and here's what's interesting, because before rewatching this telecast, I would have agreed with you. Watching it again, I don't think I agree. Because listening to it again, I don't think she's as vocally problematic as at least my memory remembered. This is very clearly the 11 o'clock number for Tanya Pinkins. This is arguably Rose's turn of... Oh. Like, it has that kind of strength, it has that kind of power in the show.
It absolutely looks like a Rose's turn.
Mm-hmm. And watching this as that, there are moments of this number where she has control, she's fine, and I would argue that where I think this performance loses its luster is not her singing, it's the camera work.
Go for it.
Because juxtaposing this with And I'm Telling You from last week. And I'm Telling You, we got context. We got the whole scene before.
Right.
But while we're watching And I'm Telling You, that camera is on Jennifer Holliday the entire time. We get to see her entire journey because the camera does not leave her. It does not leave her face. This number was filled with like sweeps and crane shots and camera moves where I was just like, I don't know what's happening because A, I didn't get the context, but B, I don't even get to see Tanya Pinkins' journey. Because I'm too busy watching like the crane shot going from left to right around her where she's like this speck on the stage. And I'm just like, if this is going to be the presentation, let me see the performance.
What you're saying is that there should have been some Sidney Lucas Ring of Keys close-ups going on here.
Yeah, and infinitely more. This camera work is doing a grand disservice to Tanya Pinkins.
You won an Emmy Award. But you took down Tanya Pinkins in the process. Was it worth it?
Accurate. And so that's my takeaway from this rewatch, because I didn't get to see any of her performance. But you don't think about that stuff when you watch it the first time. And you're like, oh, I don't know what this number is about. It must be the actress's fault, which I don't think is true. The defense rests.
Ain't never been no good finding joy the way you should.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Third performance of the evening from a little show called Wicked. It is a unknown number called Defying Gravity. I do think if you don't know the show, mm-hmm. this explains it well, right? You'd be like, oh, there is a green woman. She is obviously the Wicked Witch of the West. I know who she is. I know there's a woman called Glinda. There's a broom. There's a cape, right? They're doing all of the things to help you see that it is a spin on The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't even know if that's having to do with this performance and just like the conceit of the show.
They've done a good job of taking like... It's not a number in the show that I watch and go, oh, that's the Tony performance number, but it does a good job of that.
I would agree.
And I will say, in Ms. Pinkin's defense, there is some vocal trouble from Ms. Menzel in this number.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert, Aaron was in Wicked. So, mm-hmm. this is also what makes the cherry picker moment iconic, right? Like, I feel...
Oh, 100%.
Speaking of the power of the Tony Awards, the reason that Elphaba with the broom in her hand and the backlighting
mm-hmm.
is like the iconic visual of Wicked is because of this performance. And I would also say that part of the reason that we don't remember what Carolina Change is about is because they don't give you that visual moment in this commercial.
Sure. That we this was the kickoff of like, hey, guess what? Wicked's coming to your town. This is what you're going to see. Like, they chose this moment very specifically because it's the wow moment. I remember the first time I watched Wicked, I think was like December of 2003 before I moved to the city. And like, no one knew about the cherry picker yet. It was not a thing that people knew yet. And my sister and I bought tickets to go watch it. We sat in the front row mezzanine. And that moment happened and we lost our shit. I remember Adina very vividly. I remember Adina started raising on It's Me, vocally fresh, mind you, coming to my eye level at like the Gershwin balcony. And I was just like, ah, she's flying. I like lost my mind. I would argue that this is what they were going for across the nation. Right
yeah,
there.
They're ready to give you spectacle. And also I would argue that the Tony Awards is ready to give you Wicked spectacle too, right? Because this is not the only flashy moment we see from Wicked in the show.
No, not even a little
bit. The moment where they fly Kristen Chenoweth in the bubble for like a comedic bit
yeah.
is wild. She's in it for like a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Where did this bubble come from? I have so many questions.
So many questions. There's no way they had a show this afternoon and then struck the bubble out of the Gershwin and then brought it to Radio City, like down the street, and then reloaded it in. Like, this is a fresh bubble.
Do you think it was tour bubble?
I would assume it's tour bubble, as well as that cherry picker was tour cherry picker.
Mm.
I want to say that they built both of them, because at the Gershwin, the cherry picker's in the stage. It's not like they were going to deconstruct their set and like bring it over. So I was like, okay, between this bubble and this cherry picker, they were ready to go on tour. Wicked knew what they were doing and Wicked was ready to sell tickets. Where everyone else was like celebrating theater, Wicked was like, nah, girl, like tickets go on sale tomorrow.
Let's talk about Wonderful Town's performance of Swing.
Okay.
Which starts with this random...
pre-recorded, like, outside on Restaurant Row.
With the full ensemble on Restaurant Row with, like, 15 seconds of pre-number airtime. I was like, who paid for them all to do this? Like, it's all about money for me, and I don't understand it.
It was weird. It was like, no one else got this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, continue.
This is some classic Kathleen Marshall with some classic, clean, sharp ensemble dancing. I mean,
yes.
This is like Kathleen Marshall when we were seeing her do Kiss Me, Kate, The Pajama Game, Anything Goes, Nice Work, right? Wonderful Town. They were all sort of like, Kathleen Marshall did this kind of show, right?
Mm-hmm. And this is arguably like the kickoff because she won, again, for the first time. Wow, this is the Tonys that feels both like yesterday and like a long time ago.
Loved this ensemble, and I want to give a shout out because it features a lot of our friends who are still working. We've got Rick Fogno. We've got Lauren Letero, choreographer of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Everything. Yeah.
Megan Sikora, Jeffrey Schechter. Like, we've got some like high quality, like...
veterans.
Yes, veterans of the Broadway stage.
Yeah.
Dancing very well.
Oh, they look great.
be different.
If you wanna be different.
Even though at times they go to extremes.
Go to extremes.
Assassins, man. What was your first thought when you were watching this performance of Everybody's Got the Right from the Assassin's Revival?
My first thought was, wow, watching this in 2020, this number is chilling as fuck.
There are so many guns.
Just an all-white cast, happy with their guns. And I was just like, yo, I don't know, man. Which again, it's awkward because I know this show. I know this is a wonderful show. But like just watching it in this cultural moment, this is a lot. I don't think I need this.
It's a lot to watch a lot of white people point guns at you.
Mm-hmm.
It's very uncomfortable. I was like, yeah, sure. Do we need it? Like I don't know if I want to.
I mean, and again, at the time, this was in the middle of like George W. Bush's, like at the end of his first term, unbeknownst at the time, going into his second term.
And this revival was supposed to be done in 2001 and was postponed after the September 11th attacks.
Oh, so interesting.
It's like a show there's never a good time for.
Well, I mean, but like it's better. What is that word? But like back then, because of the events of the day, American patriotism was very high. Watching it in 2020, sitting here, where arguably American patriotism is not so high.
Particularly among theater goers, I would say.
Yeah, yes, yes. It was rough. Whoever does a revival of this next, after this cultural moment, is gonna have a job to do.
Well, it was scheduled to be a Classic Stage Company earlier in 2020, so I guess we'll see.
We'll see
how that goes.
We'll see how it goes. Man, I'm already distressed. Like, just stressed about talking about the show. And it's a great show, but it's just like, it was a rough watch.
The boy next door. I'm not sorry for just being me, but if you slip past the past, you can see.
In terms of lighter fare,
yeah.
The Boy from Oz. We have host Hugh Jackman singing The Boy Next Door.
Broadway delight, Hugh Jackman.
I didn't see this show. Is there a scene in the show where he performs from Radio City? Because he is definitely mentioning that he is at Radio City.
100% no. Like, 100%. Well, not 100%. I did see the show. I'm going to say like 90% no.
So
this was a full like production for the Tonys. Like, we weren't showcasing the show, we were showcasing Hugh.
Yeah, I got that feeling, because we only saw Hugh, and I would guess maybe the band from the show, and three backup singers. Mm-hmm. So this is a terrible showcase for the show, and yet is perhaps the most enjoyable number to watch. Come at me.
Well, he was unencumbered by a time limit, that's for sure.
Oh, for sure. The non-time limit section is he goes out into the audience. I assume this happened in the show. He brought someone up from the house and like did a moment. No, that wasn't a thing.
No.
Oh my gosh.
This isn't a thing. This is literally a Tony Award special.
Okay, like, so he comes out into the audience. He picks Sarah Jessica Parker to come up on to like the
little mini stage.
The mini stage. And gets her to like do dance moves with him.
And she is in her own personal nightmare.
It is honestly great TV. The moment where she's like covering her eyes. No, she's like closed her eyes. She's covering up her chest because she very clearly is afraid that she's going to pop out of the like corset top of her ballerina inspired formal wear.
And she mentions like the wardrobe malfunction from JT and
Janet Jackson. Yeah.
Where she's like, on this network, we can't have it happen again.
It was one of like the most enjoyable, like, this is real. Like, we are really watching this moment. Between that yes. and the LL Cool J, Carol Channing part, I was like, this is fun.
This was great. I mean, but it was great TV. It was absolutely great TV, 100%.
What's the show about? Unclear. It's about...
It's about Hugh!
It's about Hugh Jackman winning a Tony Award. Fantastic.
It's about yes.
Our final...
Avenue Q, It Sucks to Be Me.
Avenue Q is a show for Republican administrations. It starts out with a question and answer where...
I hate you.
Brian asks, how's life? And Kate replies, disappointing. I was like, I'm here. We're here, folks. Show for 2020. Brian says, it sucks to be broke and unemployed and turning 33. And I was like, it does.
Accurate.
Other than feeling wildly topical, what was your interpretation of this performance?
This was definitely the show this season that was like the odd man out in every way. Like everything else was like glitz and glamour, camels, cherry pickers, like all these things. And this one was like puppets where you could see the puppeteers. Everything about it just like hit like in the most nostalgically beautiful ways. And then on top of it being hysterical.
Right. We see Jeffrey Seller, one of the producers, when it wins for Best Musical, saying, thank you, Broadway, for voting for your heart.
Yeah.
Which he emphasizes the word heart, which made me go versus
cherry pickers and bubbles.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
For someone who like liked Avenue Q a lot, has not listened to Avenue Q in 10 years, watching this performance, mm-hmm. I was like, this weathers well. This yes. is a good show and a good Tony performance.
What? It's a wonderful Tony performance. It tells you what the show's about. It features all of its characters and they all get good laughs. You feel like you have a good time. Like my favorite takeaway from watching it again and watching it now without the drama and like the assumption that Wicked was going to win. Honestly, we should have known.
Well, it's interesting that Wicked was the presumptive winner because it was the big juggernaut that would tour well, mm-hmm. that families could go to. And now, when we think about what wins Best Musical, it's really small musicals that win Best Musical.
Yeah.
It's Dear Evan Hansen. It's The Band's Visit. It's
Hadestown. Yeah.
Like small musicals triumph. And this was sort of the start of that, I feel.
I feel like that's right. Well, and especially this is the one that was like, had this stayed off Broadway, everybody would have been happy. But it was just that good that they were like, let's bring it to the Golden?
Yeah.
Let's bring it to the Golden and just see what happens. With all of these newcomers, it's truly where the show sort of stands on its own. These people, Stephanie DeBrugio, Jennifer Barnhart, John Tartaglia, Rick Lyons, these are from like the Sesame Street Muppet world. They're not part of us, and yet like they made the best theater this year.
Yep.
It's great. And like we should have known. That's my point. We should have known.
It sucks to be you on Avenue Q.
All right. It's time for our Yelp review.
Let's do our Yelp review.
Our non-sanctioned Yelp review.
So, Mo, which performance made the show look better than it was?
I'm going to go with Fiddler because it showed you all the high-octane parts and none of the boring parts, which is most of the show. But maybe you convinced me that it's actually the Boy from Oz now that I've learned that what we saw was not actually from the show.
Yeah, because my answer is 100% Boy from Oz, because Hugh Jackman the musical looks awesome, and it would make me want to buy tickets for the Boy from Oz. Having seen Boy from Oz, from what I remember, it's moderate, but Hugh Jackman is fantastic and well-deserved his Tony.
Okay, well, speaking of well-deserved, what made you want to buy a ticket? Which performance made you want to buy a ticket?
I would say Avenue Q because the performance was fantastic. But I'd also say Fiddler just because I love Fiddler.
Oh my gosh. It's Avenue Q. It's 100% Avenue Q.
But Fiddler's great. But yeah, but Avenue Q, probably final answer, Avenue Q.
Yes.
Which speech moved you the most, Mo?
You know, remembering back, I thought it was going to be Jeff Witte because I think it meant something for me as a young homosexual man to see a young homosexual man cry tears of joy on television.
Okay.
But I was going to say that until I watched Felicia Rashad win for Raisin in the Sun. Because who doesn't want to see their mom win an award?
No. Yes. Yeah. Like,
the audience erupts. Condola Rashad gets kissed on the cheek by her mom. That is the gift that is going to get me through 2020. And then she, with her Felicia Rashad reserve, says, I've often wondered what it takes to win this award. I love that thought that she wanted it. You know,
yeah.
I think we imagine people who are so esteemed don't need awards. And she's like, nah, brah, I wanted that.
Yeah.
And then to say that it takes tremendous self-effort and amazing grace. And I was like, see, you said you wanted it, but then you said you get it because of being a good person. That's why you're our mom and we love you.
She's so great.
What about you?
My answer is the same. Because on top of all of those things, she is the first Black woman to win the leading actress in a play award.
Wait, what? Like,
yes. Yeah.
I hate our history. Our history sucks, Aaron.
Yeah. In 2004. And so on top of the fact that, like, she might have just wanted this as a brilliant actress, she also wanted this because this would be a glass ceiling she'd be able to shatter. And we watched it happen. And it was done by the, like, I mean, on top of the fact that the Allen family is, like, this family of legends. And they were all literally just sitting right there. Like, not only was Condola Rashad so happy for her mom, Debbie Allen was happy for her sister. And with all joy and nothing else. Like, they were all so proud of her for winning this award. It was so, it was beautiful. And then on top of that, like, again, watching in a way that only Felicia Rashad could do, there was equal parts like gratitude and movedness, as well as still poise and grace and elegance. Like, it was a spectacular moment. Yeah, biggest surprise win.
Honestly, Jeff Witte over Tony Kushner, I think. Not that, yeah. That Avenue Q book isn't inventive, but just like Tony Kushner is an icon of playwriting, you know? Like, yes. This is the writer of Angels in America, and he wrote...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it is a little shocking.
Oh, no, I agree 100%. Mine was the same, but like even more so because both Jeff Witte and Bobby Lopez and Jeff Marx won over Tony Kushner and Janine Tesori. Like, talk about two icons of not even musical theater, just theater in general.
Right.
These are legendary playwrights and composers, and Avenue Q won. Honestly, we should have known.
Yes. I mean, the whole night was like going for Avenue Q. So even though the end is a shocker, it shouldn't have been.
Yeah, it shouldn't have, like now that we know the history, we're like, oh duh. Like, we should have known. We absolutely should have known.
Would you recommend watching, Aaron?
Yes. 100%. Would you?
Yes. I think this is a quality Tony Awards, right?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a party. You've got the Hugh Jackman, Sarah Jessica Parker moment, which I love, right?
You do love that.
You've got a shocking win. And even though we disagree, it is a good opening number. It's not my favorite, but it's a good opening number.
It's Aaron. The best opening number. Yeah. So same. I have many, many, many more reasons, like an obnoxious person, but... Because obviously for the opening, I love the opening. Shout out to Nahum the Beggar yet again, because fierce. Like, that back was selling tickets, and he got my, at least second place in my ticket purchasing. LL Cool J and Carol Channing, because iconic.
You're right.
Felicia Rashad breaking a glass ceiling, because all of these reasons are worth watching, but that alone is worth watching.
Mm.
But the best part, and I will take this to my grave, is... Listeners, Mo had never seen this before.
Yeah.
And I definitely not only warned him about it, but then I also like screenshotted it and sent it to him after I watched it. If you watch the end, best musical, Avenue Q wins, everybody's speeching, everybody's gagging, everybody's screaming. At one point in the show, the camera pans out to a big wide shot of the stage. If you pause it at that moment and look up at the proscenium, there is an LED screen that says in big bold letters, Wicked, right next to the other LED screen that in big bold letters says Best Musical. Like,
the win shocked everyone, even
even the Tonys.
Even the guy running projections. All right, so at the end of our first half of our 2004 discussion, we selected the 1976 Tony Awards as our final Tony telecast to watch for this mini-series. The Ensembles was produced today by me, Mo Brady.
And by me, Aaron Albano. Special thanks to Wasif Sami for the background research on this week's Tony season. There are two great ways you can be helping the Ensembles right now. One is by becoming a Patreon member at patreon.com/theensemblist.
And the second is by leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Even better, do you have a favorite Tony's telecast that we haven't recapped yet and wish we would? Tell us about it in that review and we'll maybe recap it in a future episode.
Please follow The Ensemblist wherever you listen to podcasts, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or at bpn.fm, the home of Broadway Podcast Network. You can also follow us on Instagram. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Until next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.